Welcome to Conservation Unfiltered, a podcast all about the North American model of conservation and your chance to dive into conversations about trends, research, and outdoor activities. Now let's get wild.
This one male and three female dawns were taken to this one estate called Laukko, and there it all began. So basically the whole white-tailed deer population in Finland is based on these four individuals.
Hello everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of the Conservation Unfiltered podcast presented by Conserve the Wild. I'm your host, Jason Creighton, and this is episode number 84. Wait, there's white-tailed deer in Finland? Now, today we're going to be talking just about that, white-tailed deer in Finland, with a new buddy of mine, Joni Peritinen. Joni, I'm sorry if I butchered your name there. Joni is the communication specialist for the Hunting Museum of Finland. He's a wealth of knowledge, and I really enjoyed this conversation we've had. He has a bachelor's in natural resources and forestry, a master of arts in Finnish history. He did his thesis on hunting legislation of 1962 and the role of the Finnish Hunters Association. I would love to be able to get a college master's on hunting, the history of hunting. That would be awesome. Good for him. That's just absolutely awesome. He's a lifelong hunter too. And we're going to be talking about everything from hunting in Finland, you know, in regards to that with the right to hunt, what kind of animals you can hunt, how you go about getting a license, what kind of methods they use. We're also going to talk a little bit about the public support of hunting and what it's like in Finland. And then, of course, we're going to talk about white-tailed deer, their origin story, what the herd is like there, and sort of talk a little bit about how this introduced species from North America has sort of impacted life around Finland. It's a really good conversation, really interesting conversation, and a wonderful story that I'm going to stop talking and just let you go ahead and listen to, because, Matt, if you love white-tailed deer, you're going to want to hear this story. So let's just dive right into it with Joni. Welcome back, everyone. Another episode. And this one, we are expanding our borders. As you heard in the intro, we're going to be talking about Finland, hunting in Finland, and specifically some white-tailed deer. And to help me with all that information, I have Joni. Thank you for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, everyone heard in the intro, your credentials. We have a shared connection of being a lifelong hunter. You know, you've been hunting since you were a child. I've been hunting since I was a child. So I'm sure, you know, the act of hunting, no matter where you are, is going to be very much the same, right? Hunting is hunting. The sort of goal is to go out into the wilderness, whatever that may look like where you're living, and, take an animal really for food. But there's going to be differences, right? So, we see big traditional differences in the United States. You know, I live in Pennsylvania. We have a way of doing things here when we're hunting. And then people in, North Dakota or New Mexico, in other states, they're going to have slightly different things that they do based on their traditions. Mm-hmm. So what is hunting like in Finland? Are there any, I guess the first thing is, who can hunt in Finland? In the United States, we have wonderful opportunities. If you want to hunt, you take a hunter safety course and buy a license and you're allowed to hunt. Is it the same way in Finland?
Roughly, yeah. But in Finland, When you start hunting, you have to do a test, which is not an easy one, actually. And after that, you get your hunting license or hunting card. But that requires to read quite a big book about the hunting tradition in Finland and all the ways of hunting, and a little bit of biology of the game animals as well. And you have to recognize the animals, like waterfowl or something like that, which can be a bit difficult. And also the legislation is something that you have to really know quite well. And after that, you get your hunting license, but that doesn't mean that you can go hunting wherever you want to. In Finland, the right to hunt is related to land ownership. So if you own your own land, you can hunt there. But if you don't, you have to rent the license, or you have to have the permission of the landowner. And after that, you can go hunting. And it depends on the species as well. If it's only like birds or hare or fox or some small animals, then it's a bit easier. But if you want to hunt a white-tailed deer, for example, then you need to have an area at least 500 hectares. And with that area, you can apply licenses from the government. So basically, this means that the hunting clubs are only able to acquire such a big land area. So white-tailed deer and moose hunting in Finland is done by hunting clubs in general.
So there's been, the United States has a wonderful history of publicly owned land. So land that's owned by either the federal government or the states that is open to multi-use, which you could go hiking on that land, you can bird watch, you can, depending on the rules, you could camp. And then oftentimes a lot of this land you can also hunt on. And in the last, I'd say 10 years, there's been a huge push within the hunting community where the cool thing to do now is not to, as you say, rent land, or we would say lease land to hunt. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing to do now is to go to this public land, go to a Bureau of Land Management area, could be a state forest or a national forest, and hunt on this land that literally every single person in America can claim ownership to, because that's sort of the way that it's stated. Are there public lands in Finland that the government would allow you to hunt on?
In northern Finland there are, or in Lapland. There are some areas in southern Finland owned by the government as well, but usually, even in those cases, the government is leasing that land to hunting clubs. But in the north, there are areas owned by the state or the government, and the government will sell you licenses to go hunting. And every season there's a bit of a competition. Hunters from all over the country are trying to get the permission to go grouse hunting, for example, to northern Finland, especially in the government-owned land area. It's maybe the surroundings can be a bit nicer than in southern Finland, where the forests are managed in a quite an economical way, maybe. But yeah, it is possible.
So if I'm a resident like you would like to go hunting. You let's say you don't own land, and you want to hunt somewhere. And you have to rent and pay to hunt on someone's property. I mean, what are we looking at cost-wise? And I know that could, I mean, depending on who owns the land and how much land, it could be, all over the place. But I mean, is it very expensive for to rent these places?
Not really. I was talking about, I said renting, it's not a very good term actually, because usually the hunting clubs, maybe they don't even pay any money. They can hand out a little bit of meat to the owner in exchange for the right to hunt. And that's quite a common practice. So for example, my hunting club, we don't pay any money for individuals, only for a couple of land areas owned by the city and one company. But even then, the amount is sort of it's not a, we are not talking about very big money here.
Okay, because that's, I mean, there has been in the last 20-30 years, you know, we refer to it as leasing land from private ownership. You know, the amount has gone up. I mean, it can get very expensive for some very good quality, I mean, you know, land that you're hunting and some good quality animals, but it, you know, the idea of paying to hunt either by purchasing land or leasing land can get expensive here. That's really cool to me to see that, to hear that it really doesn't cost a lot of money. It's just, you know, sharing your harvest with the landowner, you know, can be sort of your payment for utilizing that land. I like that. That's a good way to go. And I wish we could, in the United States, could go back in time to where that was more common of an occurrence. So you've mentioned grouse, you've mentioned, you know, we've talked about some white-tailed deer. What other animals are there to hunt in Finland?
Well, in economic terms, the moose is the most important one, which I'm not sure. I guess we say moose, not elk. It's like the Canadian moose. This is always a problem which one to use. But in any case, that's the most important one. Grouse, hare, fox, small beasts in general, waterfowl, some other fur animals like beaver, for example, smaller deer species like roe deer, and what else? Well, like game birds, geese, doves, or even seals if you're really into it. But that's not easy. I've never even tried it. It sounds so difficult that I'm not sure if I want to even try it.
I mean, you mentioned a lot of species that we also have here in the United States. With the exception of roe deer, we do not have, I can't say that we do have roe deer, but they would be on game farms where they're sort of raised in a similar fashion to livestock. And then you would pay a very large amount of money to then hunt that deer. But I don't want to get too much into that because that's something I'm not a big fan of. But you mentioned seals. As we talked a little bit before we started recording, in the United States, about 5% of our population hunts. About 5% of the population is anti-hunting, very strong. There should be no hunting anywhere in the world. The rest of the population, for the most part, is pretty open to the idea and concept of hunting, as long as you're hunting for food, right? Not what they're considering trophy hunting. So it's generally pretty well perceived in the United States. It's actually gone up. It's actually, the perception of hunting has actually improved over the last 10 years, as long as we're talking about hunting for food. I feel like seals would not be one of the approved species for hunting for many people, but what's the general consensus of, you know, non-hunters in Finland? Do they seem to be okay with hunting?
I think they're okay. It sounds actually pretty much similar as you have in the States, that there is this small minority who are really opposing hunting, and that's something that probably we cannot do anything about it. There will always be a small minority against hunting. But as you said, the same is here that for the past, I don't know, decade or two, the hunting has become more and more acceptable, I think. It was maybe in the 80s and 90s when there was this small period of time when people were not that keen, but that was maybe a part of this larger environmental ideology or switch in it in the 80s and 90s. But in general, in Finland, people are pro-hunting, and actually the amount of hunters have become up or have increased during the last decades or so.
And really?
Not much, but yeah, in the 21st century, more and more hunters, or there are more and more hunters, and also more women hunting nowadays. There was a very small decrease like 2 years ago, but nothing big. So
we are seeing a pretty dramatic increase in women participating in hunting over the last 10 years. It's almost seems exponential is probably not the right term to use, but it's really been increasing in the last couple of years. But our overall numbers, excluding 2020, which was a COVID year, that we did have an increase in license sales during COVID. But outside of that, we've actually had a decrease in the amount of hunters in the United States over the last 20 years, really since the late 80s, early 90s. We sort of peaked around that time. So the United States, we saw a pretty big increase in fishing and hunting license sales during COVID because there was really no other safe activity to do, right? I mean, you can go outside and be isolated, so it was easy to, get out of your house and be able to do an activity. Did Finland see, do you have any idea if Finland saw any kind of increase in people participating, or maybe someone that used to hunt all of a sudden said, well, I have time now, so I'm going to hunt this year because there's nothing else going on?
Yeah. I'm not sure what is the case with hunting. Maybe not a very large increase, but in outdoor activities in general, those have become very, very popular now due to coronavirus. But maybe not as much in hunting. That can be because it takes a little bit of time before you can actually start hunting in practice if you start from scratch. So that might be an issue.
Yeah, that's something I sort of skipped over there when we talked about whenever you were mentioning how the steps someone needs to take to start hunting. Here in the United States, I mean, when you take your hunter safety course, at least in, it's not like this in every state. Every state has a hunter safety course. You have to pass it. Some states are multiple days. Here in Pennsylvania, it is one basically 6-hour day, I think it is, and then a test at the end. And then literally that evening, you can, with that card, go buy your license and then hunt the next day. If something's in season, it's pretty easy to go through the steps you need. Here in the United States to be able to start hunting. It seems like some of the information you need to know in Finland and the steps you need to take seem pretty in depth compared to what we're used to here in the United States.
In Finland, you basically need to know someone. You can go to the governmental, the government-owned land, but the seasons are quite short in grouse hunting, for example, and also the land is far away from the big centers. So basically, if you want to hunt in southern Finland, you kind of need to know someone to get in a hunting club, and that can be tricky, especially when the hunting clubs usually, or many times, they prefer hunters who own land so that they can increase their own hunting area. And this is a problem, especially for young hunters who are not living in the countryside. And there's been some discussion about this. And for example, Finnish Hunters Association is recommending to really take young hunters to the clubs in a very early stage. And there's this kind of a godfather thing where hunters can try to teach young kids hunting if they don't have a hunter in their own family and stuff like this. But it can mean, if you want to start from a scratch, it can mean that you have to do a little bit of work for maybe a couple of years before you can actually go moose hunting, for example. It really depends on the situation. It depends on who you know.
A couple years. I mean, that's great. So what you're talking about having, you know, trying to have kids come out to hunting clubs, that's what we would refer to here in the States as R3. So we have this R3 initiative, recruit, retain, and reactivate hunters. And basically the idea is we want to get more people hunting, right? What programs can we put in place? What things can we do? A lot of states have initiated youth hunting days where only, you know, someone under the age of say 16 can go hunting on that day, or, you know, with an adult, but they're the only ones that can actually take game on that day. There's all kinds of different programs in place, but it's super easy to get someone in hunting. Just last hunting season, I helped a coworker start hunting for the first time. I got him interested in March and he went out hunting for the first time in October. So, you know, just a couple months, he went from a non-hunter to a hunter. There is no way he would have put in a couple years worth of work to be able to go out hunting for the first time. I could definitely see that as a pretty big barrier to get into hunting and how that could cause some issues, at least in the United States.
Yeah, it is. And it really depends on the situation. If you have a friend who hunts and who is a member of a hunting club, then it's quite easy to be a sort of a visitor for a day or two per season. But to get inside a hunting club, if you don't know anyone and you don't own any land, then it's a problem. Then it takes a little bit of time.
Okay, this is all interesting to me, but now I want to get to the very interesting part. White-tailed deer, I have looked at my entire life as a North American species. It is, you can only hunt it in the United States, in Canada. We have what are called coos deer in Mexico, which are very closely related to white-tailed deer, sort of a subspecies. But then just a couple months ago, I found out Finland has white-tailed deer. How did that happen?
It was a gift, actually. immigrants from Finland who moved to Northern America, or in Minnesota specifically, in the 1930s, they really wanted to give something back to the old home country. And they thought that maybe a good idea would be to give a whole game species to enhance the economy and wilderness of Finland. And they started to work on that and contacted Finnish Hunters Association and applied for permits. And yeah, in 1934, a steamship came from the United States carrying seven white-tailed deer, dawns, three male and four female. Two males were dead during this journey, and the last one was in a very bad condition, but he survived nevertheless. And one female was turned out to be blind, which was not a big issue because it was killed by an eagle anyway. So this one male and three female dons were taken to this one estate called Laukko, and there it all began. So basically the whole white-tailed deer population in Finland is based on these four individuals.
Talk about an amazing gift. I want to give back to my old country. I'm going to give an entire game species. That's crazy. So it started with essentially four deer. What kind of numbers are we looking at now?
Now actually the population has been growing very, very fast during this couple of years. So now there is more than 120,000 deer in Finland, and next season we should be hunting about at least 75,000 deer. And it's also almost becoming a bit of a problem that because they are the population is living in quite a small area, so there are some issues that maybe we can talk about as well. The whole history of white-tailed deer in Finland, it's quite astounding, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I have all kinds of thoughts running through my brain. White-tailed deer are highly adaptable. We talk about that in the United States all the time. You know, we have housing plans that they thrive in. We have farmland that they thrive in. They can live in our national forests. I mean, we have white-tailed deer virtually everywhere in the United States. So, you know, that number in less than 100 years going from four to well over 100,000 is pretty impressive. Do you happen to know when were people in Finland able to actually hunt white-tailed deer? I mean, how many years did it take to get from four deer to a population that you could actually hunt?
It was sometime in the 1960s. 1960. So less than 30 years.
That's crazy. Okay. So we have this population growth. It's going crazy. You have a lot of deer. What do people think about those deer? You mentioned some issues. Are they well received? Like, do people like seeing the deer, or has it just gotten to the point where there's just too many in the wrong areas?
If we go back for something like 10 years, then the situation used to be that people were fine with it. And as you said, it was nice looking at the deer. It was fun to see them walking around. And because they are a bit different than moose, it's quite tricky to see a moose in the wild. But to see white-tailed deer, that's not a big thing. So in general, they were liked. But now in southern Finland, the population has grown so fast that there are some problems with farmers. They eat some crops. There are problems with people's gardens. If you want to grow your flowers, it can be a problem. And also with traffic. So there are too many traffic accidents at the moment. So basically the government is trying to, the government is saying to hunters that you should kill even more deer than you necessarily want to.
That sounds eerily similar to the populated, the populated areas of Pennsylvania as well. Too many deer in these populated areas, and you know, we have seasons that seem to last, you know, the majority of the year. Ways of methods of take being more liberal during certain times of the year to try to get more deer taken out of certain areas, to the point where we actually have some neighborhoods not too far from where I live that have, you know, they have issues with deer. The people that live in those communities don't want hunters to kill the deer, but they don't want the deer. So they have tried to do control methods like paying sharpshooters to put down piles of corn, essentially, to bait the deer in and then shoot them with guns with silencers at night to try to take out as many deer as they can. That typically doesn't go over well either. There was actually a community in New York and Michigan, a couple communities there, that their way of not allowing hunting but still trying to reduce the amount of deer was to capture the deer and then sterilize them, both does and bucks. And through research, we have found that that is not an effective way to control the deer population. Really what we have seen through the majority of the research that has been published is that the really only effective means of controlling the deer population is to allow hunting and expand hunting opportunities around these communities. Unfortunately, not all the neighbors like that, so doesn't always happen. So when in Finland, when you decide, you know, you go through all the process, you join a hunt club, you get your license, you're going to hunt a deer. How do you hunt deer in Finland?
Well, the most common way is to go to some near to some feeding grounds or fields and just wait from high seats or on the ground and wait for the deer to come, and that's fairly easy way to hunt, but an effective way, but also a way where you can really calm down and just like enjoy the nature by not doing anything. So I like that quite a lot, but the problem is that if you have the pressure to shoot more than you actually want to, then it's not that fun if you feel the obligation to go sit near a field. But yeah, that's the main way. But now in the past couple of decades, we have been hunting with dogs more and more with dachshund, the small dog, and also now a new one is a German Spaniel. So basically, they just there are small dogs which are not following the deer too long. They are just kind of pushing the deer away, and then the deer will come to shoot us.
So I'm assuming from these high seats where you're using rifles to shoot these deer. Is there any crazy Finnish person out there using a bow and arrow to try to shoot a deer? Is that anything that's even remotely common?
No, it's becoming more common, but it has not been legal, but only for a couple of years for some reason. I'm not sure why, but I think it was like 5 years ago when it became legal to hunt deer with a bow.
That's interesting to me, because I mean, I am an avid archery hunter. I mean, that's my preferred way to hunt deer. It's not the most effective, right? Obviously, because you can't shoot as far. You know, it's a little bit tougher, but I enjoy it. We, you know, in the United States, and you know, I mentioned this with the sort of different traditions in different areas of the United States, we have all kinds of different ways to go about hunting deer. Out in the Western states, a lot of them do what's called a spot and stalk, where you'll look from a distance with optics, you know, binoculars, find the deer you want and then try to slowly sneak up closer to it until you can get within range to shoot it. In the east where I am, we do a lot of tree stand hunting, which is basically like the high seats, but you're almost hanging off the side of a tree. Archery hunting is huge all over the United States. And then down in the southeastern portion of the United States, they still run deer with dogs. Those dogs typically run them pretty far. Although that's becoming less and less common because of landowner issues and dogs going on land that they're not supposed to, and some different issues with that, starting to get a little bit of pushback. But we have, in every state you have different seasons. So I'll just go with Pennsylvania, my home state, as an example. Our deer season opens up around two city centers the last 2 weeks of September, and then the rest of the state opens up the first Saturday in October for archery season. So you can only use either a bow and arrow or a crossbow, and that's 6 weeks long. There is a week in the middle there where you're allowed to use a inline muzzleloader. A modern version of a muzzleloader. And then after our Thanksgiving holiday, you're allowed to hunt deer with a rifle for 2 weeks. And then there's another little bit of a break. And then we have what's called a flintlock season. So it would be a muzzleloader with the flint and a pan of powder. Definitely the most difficult part of that season is just getting the gun to even go off. So you have a wide range of, different ways that you can hunt in Pennsylvania if you want to. And with that, some people are hardcore. They only hunt, one way. A lot of people only hunt with rifles. They wait until that season. Myself, I'm an opportunist. I start in October. I start hunting with archery. If I don't fill all my tags by rifle season, I'll go out in rifle season. And then if I still haven't filled all my tags, oftentimes I'll go out for the flintlock season as well. It's just really pick and choose what you want to do here in the United States, as long as you're doing what's legal during that time. How long are your seasons for white-tailed deer in Finland?
They made it longer a couple of years ago. So it starts in September and ends at the middle of February. So quite a long.
Okay. Yeah, that is pretty long. I think ours, our longest season in our state goes from September around a couple city centers goes until the end of January, which seems crazy long compared to what it used to be. Anyone who is an avid deer hunter is typically pretty pumped up around the end of October into through about the middle of November, because that's what we term as the whitetail rut. That's when all the bucks are chasing the does, trying to breed them. It's typically one of the most exciting times to hunt because you typically see a lot of deer. There's a lot of deer movement throughout the day. Do people in the hunt clubs get real excited about the rut in Finland?
I wouldn't say that because traditionally it goes in a way that in October starts the moose hunting season, and usually the hunting clubs focus on that first. And after the moose hunting is done, after that they switch to deer hunting. And another problem is that people, if you want to go hunting deer or wait for the deer during the evening around October, November, it's so dark that it's a bit tricky. So many hunters like to do it after there's some snow. And it's also a bit easier that way because here's a long tradition of serving food for the deer throughout the winter time. So when you have established your feeding place and there's some snow, you can basically wait for the deer throughout the night if you feel like.
Okay, so let's go with a hypothetical that that you have just shot a deer or a moose. Yeah. How do you like to prepare that meat to eat it? What are some of the recipes that you would choose to use?
Oh, there are so many, but
give me maybe like your top either. Your go-to or you know your favorite way you know to have venison.
I guess my favorite would be. I'm not sure of the English term. What's it called? It's not. Is it fillet next to the deer spine from the lower back?
Like a backstrap steak.
Backstrap steak. Okay, I think that's the one. I guess that would be my favorite, especially when it's when after the deer is shot, you keep it in cold for a week or so and try not to hurry. And so the meat will get better and better all the time. So actually, I think the meat that I am eating is a lot better than even the best meat from the grocery store.
Yeah, and, I agree. I mean, anytime that I pull out some venison out of my freezer, I always feel like it tastes better. I don't know how much of that is just the memories of the experience, but I always feel like it tastes better than any of the beef that we could buy at the store. Can you give me like a traditional Finnish recipe that you would use venison in?
The traditional Finnish way of preparing any type of meat is just to put it in the oven for many hours. So it's kind of it's not a stew, but I'm not sure of the terms, but
like a very like slow roasted, slow cooked.
Right. Yeah. And there can be different parts of the deer in this whole one thing. A little bit of vegetables and some potatoes with it. So that's a very traditional way. But then again, deer is not a very traditional animal here. So
that's true. So you know, this is sort of going into this whole like, how do you prepare venison? In the United States, we try to operate with through something called the North American Model of Wildlife Conservation, and there's seven tenets or seven sisters, sort of things that. Ways to sort of make sure we're not overusing our resource, because we did overuse our wildlife resource in the early 19th century. And one of those tenets is non-frivolous use, which basically means you're not just shooting, in this case, a deer, just to take the antlers or just to take those back straps. You take all the edible parts out with you and you utilize all of those edible parts. And one of the things, you know, I grew up with, basically you use the back straps, the best quality cuts of the meat as sort of like roasts or, you know, as large cuts. And then the rest of it just got ground up and you would use that as ground meat. Recently, just in the last couple of years, one of the parts that would, of meat that would be traditionally ground up that I've stopped grinding is the meat on the neck. I've decided to now make what I call a neck roast. It's highly seasoned. Put it in a Dutch oven or a large pot with a whole lot of liquid in it, put it in the oven as you were saying for many hours. Mm. And that is some of the best, meat possible. And then the other thing that I've been doing now, is actually canning a lot of the meat. So cut it into about 1-inch cubes, add some broth to it, and pressure can it for about an hour, and then sort of do like a stroganoff with it later, or, you know, some meat tips with some gravy over noodles, some things like that. Those seem to be some of the easy go-to recipes that at least I do. But there's, you know, all kinds of different things. And there is while there are a lot of traditional recipes that a lot of people do, because it's what they've done in their families for decades, there seems to be a growing walk towards sort of more exotic recipes. I'm saying with some air quotes, doing things like ossobuco and sort of using these sort of foreign recipes from other countries, and just replacing what originally would have been beef or lamb with venison and things that are very highly flavored, and not just these real quick throw a can of mushroom soup in, you know, condensed mushroom soup in with your chunked up venison and cook that down. And so I'm always looking for sort of new and different recipes. I'm part of that sort of new trend of trying to find new recipes to do and trying to figure out what way I can prepare the meat in a different way that's still going to be extremely, extremely good.
Yeah, we have that trend here too, I think. Especially now when we have lots of deer, so you don't have to think that if I have deer or venison, I have to prepare it in a way that it tastes like venison. So this is the traditional idea, is that you shouldn't season it at all, just put a little bit of salt and pepper. And that's fine, it tastes good, but if you do it every year, throughout the year, then the seasoning starts to be interesting. And for example, I just read this one paper or magazine about hunting where they were recommending doing kebab of deer, and I've tried this something Korean recipes where they use a lot of quite strange spices that I'm not used to, but it works very well there too. And also smoking meat is very popular here.
Yeah, well, my go-to for, especially if it's someone that either says they don't like venison or they have never had it before, my go-to recipe is always tacos, because, you know, Mexican tacos, very highly spiced, really covers what a lot of people consider gaminess, you know, that venison flavor. And I've always gotten some pretty good reviews whenever I put tacos on the table and they're made from venison. So this has been absolutely awesome. I love the idea of whitetail deer in Finland. If I want to come to Finland, what to hunt deer and or moose or even roe deer, I mean, what would I need to do? I don't, you know, I'm obviously from a different country. Is it possible for me to come to Finland and hunt?
Yeah, it's basically the same procedure as the Finnish hunters. You do have to have some kind of a license from your own country. So if you can prove that you have the license to hunt in the United States, then it should be okay for the Finnish government. And the same thing goes with guns. If you have the right to own a gun or hunt with a gun that is used for deer hunting, then you can use it here as well. There's this shooting license that we take at least every 3 years. But usually if there is a similar type of shooting test in some other country, that is okay for Finnish government as well. Or you can do the test here just to prove that you know how to use a gun.
Well, that's good. I this has put me down a rabbit hole of trying to figure out how I can get to Finland to be able to do some hunting. It might not be for a couple of years. The flight itself right now is just insanely expensive, but I feel like the experience would be absolutely amazing, if nothing else, just for the scenery that I feel like from the pictures I've seen would feel somewhat familiar, but yet at the same time be definitely, you know, understood that it would feel like I would be in a foreign land, which obviously I would be.
Yeah, they said that is the one reason why Finnish people move when they moved to Northern America in the 1800s and early 1900s. They settled close to the Great Lakes because it was so familiar. Minnesota was the surroundings were so familiar that they felt a bit like home, and they knew how to live there in that climate and in that nature.
Well, Joni, thank you for coming on and talking about hunting in Finland and white-tailed deer. It's amazing to me that a group of people said, "Hey, you know what? Like, we're going to give a gift of an entirely new game species to our homeland." So, this has been awesome. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much. This was a fun and interesting talk, and I wish you all the best with your work, and hope to see you in Finland at some day.
I hope I get there too, and if I do, you're the first phone call I'm making. Man, what a story. What'd I tell you? It's amazing that a group of people that immigrated to the United States, living in Minnesota, just said, you know what, we want to give something back to our home country. Let's just give them a whole new species of animal, right? That's intense, man. That's awesome. This has taken me down a rabbit hole to see how I could find time and the money to be able to get to Finland to hunt white-tailed deer, which seems crazy to fly, 18, 20 hours just to hunt something I can hunt right out my back door. But I really think it would be an interesting thing to do, just an incredible adventure. So I'm really still down that rabbit hole trying to figure out how I can make this work. Obviously, I have to thank Joni for coming on. He was awesome to talk to. Don't be surprised if you hear that Finnish accent come back on this podcast in the near future. If you like this episode, you have questions about it, you want to just share your thoughts on this episode or any of the episodes you've listened to up until now, find us on social media, right? Twitter, Instagram, search Conserve the Wild. You're going to find us. You can find us on Facebook too. There's actually a dedicated Facebook group to this podcast. So if you want to extend the information, learn more, and just interact with myself and other people who listen to these episodes, search for the Conservation Unfiltered podcast group on Facebook. That is where you can find out everything, including when the new episodes drop, if you're not already subscribed. So until next week, stay wild.